Let's face it, in our busy lives, we don't eat enough fruits and vegetables. In fact, according to the CDC, only 1 in 10 Americans are eating the recommended daily amount of fruits and vegetables each day, missing out on essential vitamins, minerals, fibers, and antioxidants. And that's where Balance in Nature comes in. Balance in Nature sources only the best produce, free from pesticides, heavy metals, and harmful bacteria. And Balance in Nature is the best fruit and vegetable product on the market. They use only fresh whole fruits and vegetables inside each capsule. They don't use any GMOs, fillers, binding agents, or preservatives of any kind. You're getting real food, real science, real nutrition. I would never endorse a product that I don't use myself, and since using Balance in Nature, I feel more alert, I have more energy, my focus is sharper, and I feel great. Live life to the fullest and choose Balance in Nature. And guess what? PAS Report listeners can get 35% off the first preferred order. Start getting the recommended daily amount of fruits and vegetables you need by using code PAS at balanceofnature.com.
Welcome to the PAS Report Weekly Roundup Podcast. The PAS Report provides an honest analysis on the critical issues that matter to you without the biased media filters. Here's your host, Professor Nicholas Giordano.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the PAS Report Podcast. This is your host, Nick Giordano, and I hope you had a good weekend. President Biden, he completed his Middle East tour. He made it. He had to separate them out, the European tour from the Middle Eastern tour, because obviously he couldn't handle too much at any given time. And it's clear that the United States has taken a backseat on the world stage. Aside from a few gaffes in Israel, the real problem was Saudi Arabia. And it was a problem on several fronts. This is the same president that slammed the Saudi Crown Prince, MBS, Mohammed bin Salman. He said he wanted to make MBS a pariah on the world stage. Now we are going there, begging MBS to increase oil output. It's embarrassing. An American president shouldn't have to grovel at the feet of the Saudi royal family, especially considering that we could increase our oil productivity here. We don't have to rely on the Saudis for our oil, but this administration has made us hostage to the Middle East once again. And for what? For what? All because he wants to placate the environmental extremists here at home? It's ridiculous. Nothing but smoke and mirrors. Can someone please explain? How is it any different for the environment if we produce our own oil or if the Saudis increase their capacity? That's how you know all these people are frauds, and they don't care about the environment. They care more about optics than substance. Sorry, but I'd rather increase our productivity here at home and not be reliant on nefarious international actors and be beholden to them. Then you have this whole Jamal Khashoggi thing. And what happened to Khashoggi was torture and murder. It was a clear human rights abuse. And this reflects the brutality of the Saudi regime. You have the press hounding President Biden about Khashoggi and whether or not he's going to confront MBS on human rights. Not for nothing. If we're going to confront the Saudis over anything, how about we confront them about 9/11 to find out exactly what the Saudi government did in the lead up to it and following the attacks of 9/11. The phony virtue signaling has got to stop. They keep pushing this Khashoggi thing. The same frauds who say nothing about the communist regime of China, which is one of the most brutal regimes on the planet and has thousands of Khashoggis every single year. But that's because they don't want to upset their communist masters. That's what it comes down to. In any event, not going to harp on this. I want to talk economics today. I have a great guest coming on. I have Jeff Webb, an entrepreneur. Jeff founded Varsity Sprint and Varsity Brands. He's the founder and president of the International Cheer Union. He's the publisher of Human Events, humanevents.com, which you probably know from Jack Posobiec. And he is the author of American Restoration, How to Unshackle the Great Middle Class. It's a book that everyone should read. Before I bring on Jeff, make sure you hit the follow button so you never miss an episode of this podcast. Also, go to the PAS Report website, PASReport.com. Sign up for the newsletter. You could share the episode. You could look at the show notes. I have all the links up. With that plug out of the way, I want to bring in Jeff Webb to the PAS Report. Jeff, welcome to the PAS Report podcast. How are you today?
I'm fine. Great to be with you.
I'm glad you're here because I want to talk to you about the economy. We just got the most recent inflation numbers. And I remember not so long ago that this inflation was supposed to be transitory. Obviously, that hasn't
happened. Right. Yeah. Remember that word, that phrase? Exactly.
And then it was supposed to go down. They're like, all right, we hit the peak. Now it's supposed to go down, only it increased. So what's going on out there? You know, a lot of your audience, they don't understand the economy. They don't know about inflation, the causes of inflation. What they do know is that it's affecting them. They know that it's affecting their bottom line. They're struggling. They're trying to put food on the table, balance on what bills they could afford to pay, which ones they can't. So what's the story with the inflation out there?
You know, I think in a sentence, I mean, just oversimplify it and we can talk about some of the details, but I think you've got too much liquidity, too much money out there, and then you've got too many people not working. And those people not working have really gummed up our supply chain. And so people are having difficulty. I mean, all types of products and services, we're having difficulty actually delivering those to the public, to the consumer. So you've got more demand than you've got supply. And but you know, economics 101, the price goes up. It's costing more for labor to kind of address the supply chain. People are paying more for component parts. Do they have any choice? Not really. If you want to get the product out. So and all those things are being passed along in kind of our economic chain. So and until some things change, I don't know. I don't see an end in sight. I don't see this as being transitory. I think this could be fairly well entrenched. So there are going to have to be some changes made. And there's a big question in my mind about even if we do have this red wave in November, which we can talk more about that. I'm a little skeptical. I don't know that having one House of Congress can really make a lot of difference. I don't know what can be done to really throttle in kind of this mismanagement of our entire economy.
Yeah, one of my biggest concerns is that we're going to see a repeat of Japan's economy, you know, throughout the 1990s, the lost generation with the high inflation. And a lot of people out there, what nobody's really talking about is people living on debt. Okay, so we see people use their credit cards. And what the media is not telling and speaking about is that credit card debt is at an all-time high. But yes, more importantly, in the last 4 months, we've seen credit card debt go from 0.6 defaults on credit card debt go from 0.6% to well over 5%. And I suspect the number is going to go even higher within the next couple of months, meaning that basically people have hit a wall. They're out of money. They're out of credit. And that's where you start to really see the economic impact, the devastation that's coming.
Well, you're right. You know, pre-pandemic, I covered this in my book, but pre-pandemic, the average worker in this country was living paycheck to paycheck, first of all. But secondly, had an average unpaid credit card debt of $7,000. Now, it didn't sound like a huge amount of money, but if you're living paycheck to paycheck, it's untenable. And now what's happened, they've had to even increase that. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that the default, I haven't seen the figure, but I'm not surprised. And you're right. What happens now? What happens when everybody has used all their extra cash, used all their credit, and their expenses have gone through the roof? You've got energy, the average, the cost of energy combined is up nearly 40% from a year ago. I mean, food is up 10%. These are things that affect people every single day, and especially those, you know, that are in the middle class and lower.
And let's face it, this coming fall and winter, the home heating oil prices, it's going to be devastating to people out there. And usually people get their first fill up in October for the home heating oil. That's right before the election. So what do you anticipate? So you said you don't think the red wave is going to be as big as people say. I tend to actually agree with that. I think it will be a red wave. I just don't think people believe that Republicans are going to dominate. They don't realize that gerrymandering played a major role and a lot of these districts are no contest. We already know how they're going to go. But what do you see happening in November?
Look, do I think the Republicans will capture the House? Yes. I mean, I've seen numbers all over the place. Do I think they'll capture the Senate? Which is absolutely critical that they have both houses if they're going to do anything to kind of stop this runaway power grab and spending and all of the negative effects we see from the executive branch. I think it's really going to be tough. And one of the reasons is, I mean, it's not just the math and the districts. You make a very good point there. I think it's the Republicans are making the same mistake that they've made for years. The most recent one really being with regard to Obamacare and healthcare is that I call it the Mitt Romney school of campaigning. You know, Mitt Romney, Obama's numbers were so bad that Mitt Romney thought all he had to do was say, I'm not Obama. You know, and so they ran a kind of really plain vanilla campaign. And guess what? He got beat. Right. The problem I see right now is that we are, and we did the same thing with Obamacare. You know, we were going to appeal Obamacare when we got the House and the Senate. We had no plan. We had nothing that we could communicate. We had no brand. They had the Affordable Health Care Act. That sounds pretty good, right? We didn't have a plan. We were just against Obamacare.
And just to interrupt you for one second, that really annoyed me because for 6 years, Republicans campaigned on repeal and replace. And then when they got the power, you would think that they would have like a bill ready to go, one where they had experts come in and speak about it, one that's been hashed out between all the different factions within the Republican Party that was acceptable. And they literally had nothing. And you nothing. Have to stand for something.
Exactly. Well, what do they stand for this time? They're not out there. So they're talking about all the problems, inflation, the border, all the problems in Ukraine, which is another issue economically. But they're talking about all the problems, but they're not saying, here's what we're going to do. And I don't think we should underestimate the power of all of our institutions being primarily in the hands of the Democrats, especially those institutions that provide communication between our citizens, whether it's the educational establishment, as you know so well, it's the media, it's big tech, it's both parties. You know, I don't think we should underestimate the deluge of messaging that's going to be coming in favor of the Democrats and against the Republicans between now and November. And we better have a message. People better be able to go, because I think they're going to try to pin all the problems on the Republicans. Is it logical? Will everybody believe it? No. Will some people believe it? Yes. Is that going to be enough to really squeeze the margin of victory down? Could be. I'm afraid it is. I hope I'm wrong, by the way.
I hope you're wrong, too. Yeah. But it's one of those things where we look at the politicians, the officials that are in place now, and it's almost as if, not almost as if, I just did a whole podcast episode on it, they have turned their backs on the American people. Where it, you know, used to be, if you saw $5 a gallon of gas, politicians in both parties would begin to panic. You know, the party that's in power, you would have people going to the president saying, we can't allow this. We have to bring down prices or else we are going to get slaughtered. But now they come out and they say, well, Americans are going to have to deal with it. This is the liberal world order, as Biden, one of Biden's people said. This is the liberal world order. This is the wave of the future. And the American people have to suck it up and deal with it. Have you ever seen this disregard for the American people, whether it's crime, whether it's the high prices of food and gas? There's just this lack of empathy and regard for the people.
You had it at a much smaller level with Jimmy Carter's, you know, position on a malaise in America, you know, didn't do him any good, by the way. But no, I've never seen it like this. And there's this underlying arrogance with the political class and frankly, the, you know, the professional class, kind of the wealthier professional class. It's like, you know, let them eat cake, right? Part of the problem is what we were just talking about. What are the Republicans saying? You know, what is their answer? What is their concrete answer? What are we going to do? We're going, you know, what if they said, give us both houses of Congress and we will make sure that we reduce inflation by half within 1 year, right? Say it. I mean, put the marker out there, then come up with a way to do it. Even if you make it most of the way there, it'll be acceptable. What are we going to do about crime? What are we going to do about this kind of unfettered illegal immigration at the border? Say what we're going to do. By not saying that, in effect, that kind of passive approach is almost the same kind of disregard that you're talking about that you see from the Democrats. I mean, you see all these Republicans, they come up with the Lindsey Grahams and the Tom Cottons of the world. You know, they're on Fox News nearly every night. What is the plan? Nobody can tell me what their plan is. They better have one.
Absolutely. And listen, the American people are smart enough to understand that even if Republicans do capture the House and the Senate, they're still limited in what they could do because we do have a system of checks and balances, separation of powers. And it's not like there's going to be, even if they take back the Senate, it's still going to be close margins where they can't overturn any vetoes.
Exactly. And you've got the filibuster problem. You're right.
Correct. And Biden's
now
still
it's our
be,
problem, right?
And President Biden is still going to, or him or Kamala Harris will still be in the White House. So they are going to be limited in what they do. But it's important to put out the plan of how we get to lower inflation, reduce costs, and actually unleash the economy. Now, I do want to speak about President Trump for a second, former President Trump, because there was one thing that he did that doesn't get much attention, but I do believe it unshackled our economy, is the idea of regulations and the idea of deregulation, cutting the red tape, stopping with the bureaucracy, getting involved in all the different private sector entities, you know, construction projects that were taking 5-10 years to even break ground, which
no
is
doubt.
Completely ridiculous. Yep. You can't have a country and an economy survive if it takes 5 to 10 years to start off a construction project. As far as how we got to this high inflation and everything, do you think it's easily reversible if the right policies are in place and if we deregulate?
The answer would be yes. If we could get the right policies and the right people in place, could we address it pretty quickly? I think so. We'd have to define quickly, you know. Could we do it in a year? I think you could make a major hit on it in a year. I think part of the inflation, the problem with inflation, is it's psychological. You know, that nobody sees an end in sight. So everybody's trying to be in front of the curve. So part of it needs to be, we're going to be making changes. Here's what I mean. I can't emphasize enough how important the whole energy sector is. We're going to make a change. We're going to begin to deregulate. We're going to realize that we cannot eliminate fossil fuels for our energy needs for a long time. Will we keep developing some of these other renewables? Yes, but let's be realistic about what the timetable looks like. So therefore, we're going to add refining capacity. We're going to take away regulations that inhibit drilling, and you know, we're going to make a major effort there. We're going to do all these things as far as our food supply. We're going to remove regulations that hurt housing. But you're right. Trump's little mantra or little concept where you would eliminate two regulations for every one that's added. Right on the money. It's a start. You know, the other big problem that you were alluding to this is, you know, that, you know, as we're talking about the deep state, you know, the full-time government employees in that bureaucracy that take the laws that Congress makes, interpret them, enforce them. You know, they're mostly liberal. You know, they're progressive. They're off. They're say radical. So therefore, the application of those laws always comes down on the side of more regulation, a bigger government, you know, restricting private enterprise. So there's a lot to undo. There's no doubt about it.
And that's where we need to get back to some of the founding principles of limited government. I mean, the bureaucracy was never intended to be this large, and it's the bureaucracy that actually creates a lot of these problems. I mean, if we look at our economy today, you look at the COVID lockdowns, you have all these idiots in office and all these public officials that are appointed that sat there and indiscriminately shut down economies. They're the ones that determined what's essential and what's not. They have no idea that companies produce goods 2 years before they actually hit the shelves. And while auto parts may not seem essential during a lockdown, well, no, they prove very essential because the supplies run out. And they actually created the supply chain crisis. I know they like to blame it on the coronavirus itself, and they like to blame it on a degrading infrastructure. But the reality is, our infrastructure may be degraded. It may be old and outdated.
However,
when it came to the supply chain, I never had to worry about empty store shelves, never. And now we are, because of the politicians in office. Now, the politicians have also forgotten the middle class. And you actually wrote an entire book about American restoration, how to unshackle the great middle class again. So you know the forgotten middle class very well. Can you explain how we begin to unshackle the middle class, begin to bring attention? I mean, the middle class are the drivers of this country. Let's face it. Most of the people that are completely impoverished, they're going to stay impoverished because of the way the system's set up. The people that are the elite will stay the elite because of the way the system's set up. The ones who are really impacted are the middle class.
Oh, you're exactly right. It's the crunch in the middle, right? There's no doubt about it. And, you know, the deck has been gradually stacked over the last, I think, 50 years. And by the way, it's been done by Republicans and Democrats. You know, you were talking earlier about kind of the balance of power as far as our, you know, the three branches of government. There's no doubt that ceding all of the power, again, Republicans and Democrats have done it.
And it's partly the people's fault because we allowed them to do it.
Absolutely. But, you know, it was so slow and gradual and deliberate, you know, it was hard for people to really see it and understand it. And then you've almost hit this threshold, this kind of critical mass where the pandemic and some of the policies that were attempting to address the pandemic have become even more acute. It's just magnified what's happened. I mean, if you say, what's the one thing that we could do over the long haul to benefit the middle class? A return to true federalism, you know, where the federal government is reduced in size. I'm talking about the entire federal government. Everybody said, well, what about defense? Look, I'm all about a strong national defense, totally. But, you know, our Defense Department spends more than the next five countries combined every year. To assume there's no waste and inefficiency in the Defense Department is absurd. And
absolutely.
We look at, well, if you are a proponent of, you know, a strong national defense and military, we've got to have a bigger budget. That's a bunch of bull. You know, we have to be more effective. We have to eliminate waste. We have to be focused like a business. What is our objective? How do we measure what success looks like? So I think that federalism, and then you have to get into energy policy. You've got to talk about crime. You've got to talk about immigration. You've got all these other things, but we can do better at addressing all of those over the long haul if we return the basic day-to-day functions of government to the lowest possible level. I believe that.
The problem is that you're talking common sense, and unfortunately, common sense is a foreign concept in this day and age. Yeah. But the Department of Defense, you're bringing up a great point, because I'm sorry, but spending 20 years in Afghanistan at the cost of trillions of dollars, 2,500 American soldiers being killed, yeah, 20,000 plus being injured, and the Taliban is better armed and equipped today than they were in 2001, tells me that, hey, maybe we waste a lot of money and maybe we're not as effective because we don't win wars anymore. I mean, if you look at the last 70 years, the last war where we had a clearly defined victory was Desert Storm. That was the last war, 1991. But as far as the energy policies, what concerns me is that there's this illogical push for this green energy that's not ready for prime time. It is completely illogical. So they're saying that the AOCs of the world believe it's 12 years, which we're already 5 years into when she said that. So we should be doomed pretty soon. Other people say it's, you know, 100, 150 years. So they're doing this radical push towards green energy, but at the same time, they're destroying civilization with their pushes. And we're seeing the evidence around the world. We're seeing the evidence in this country as well. How do we stop that agenda from moving forward? And it's not to say that we can't adopt green energy or move towards green energy. It's taking realistic, logical solutions and implementing them that help the people and not destroy civilization. Because guess what? You could say that you're saving the planet. If you destroy civilization, what good is saving the planet going to be?
Yeah. What is it? The old saying to the doctor in the hospital, hey, you're prescribing the right medicine, but you're killing the patient in the meantime. Yeah. And that's kind of where we are. You know, the problem with this whole Green New Deal and all these renewable energy sources, there's only one problem. You know what it is? It doesn't freaking work.
Yep.
Right? It just doesn't. You know, look at what's happening in Texas. Of all states, they're bracing for the electrical grid to go out again. Of all states,
about rolling blackouts in the United States. Like, all right, California may have been used to it because of their communist policies, but I mean, again, it's something that I take advantage of it. We never had rolling blackouts.
You're exactly right. It's like I've been speaking to several student groups. I'm speaking next week to one, and we're going to talk about this. And then we're kind of gradually accepting this kind of degradation in our quality of life, whether it's infrastructure like you're talking about. You know, I mean, our airports, it's like third world country, right? People are sleeping in the halls, and every airplane is open packed, and we're having fights, and it's like crazy. So. But then you're also, when it comes to like your example, rolling blackouts. You know, I grew up in this country. I never experienced a blackout that I can remember ever. But we just almost accept I don't know. It's almost sheepish that we're accepting these lockdowns. We're accepting these blackouts. We're accepting, you know, the poor service in our, at our airlines and bad facilities at our airport and bad roads. We're accepting this. And it's horrible. We shouldn't have to do that. We have the resources to continue to be have the greatest economy on the earth. And you're right about what you said earlier. What built that economic engine is the middle class. And as long as we have policies in effect that continue to squeeze the middle class, we are not going to dig our way out of this.
No, we're not. And it's coming at a frightening time where you do see the growing power of a country like China, this communist country that's a juggernaut in how quickly it was able to develop and advance. And we allowed it to happen. I mean, we almost encouraged it. And so now we're implementing policies that actually hurt us and benefit our enemies.
Yes.
No Democrat or Republican ever would have done that 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago.
No, never. You know, I have a whole chapter in my book on political corruption. You know, it sounds kind of trite. Oh, okay, yeah, there's government waste and whatever. But, you know, the fact of the matter is our system is set up so that, you know, politicians are, I mean, they're people, right? They're, you know, they're in a position where they have certain benefits economically that we don't have. And they're written into the laws, right? And so, you know, they find a way to rationalize why they're spending money on something or why a particular contract is given to a certain group and why certain tariffs and so on should be eliminated. Or anyway, so that it's just, you know, the amount of kind of crony capitalism, and I call it like legal and illegal corruption. It may be legal, but it is corrupt. And it's killing us, you know. It's, again, something that has to change. And there has to almost be a different approach. Our approach, especially to the executive branch, the legislative branch as well, but the executive branch, it's become so bloated. It's gotten so much power that the way it's administered doesn't work. There has to be a business approach. There has to be, you know, all these programs that are funded, whether they're domestic or foreign policy or defense, there's no review every year about we're spending billions of dollars on this program. Is it working?
God forbid. You're talking common sense again. Right? God forbid.
Yeah. Isn't that, it's not working. So we have to somehow build in the kind of internal auditing sort of systems that you see in private companies where each department is audited on kind of a rolling basis about how much money you're spending, how are you doing it, how efficient are you? What are we achieving? Guess what? A lot of them would go away. We went in tomorrow and said, we're cutting the entire federal budget by 10%. Not cutting it the way they figure it, like less than it would have grown, but cutting it. Like if you walked in as a turnaround or executive in a business, you're hired to do a turnaround. You're going to come in and say, for something that's been running for years and years and years, there is innate waste in there. It is there. Start with reducing it. Squeeze,
I say,
make everybody squeal, right?
You could cut the government 20%. Nobody would feel a damn thing. And just
exactly. Yeah.
And to give an example.
Maybe the counties around Washington might, right?
Absolutely. But, yeah. You know, just to illustrate your point, we have, I think it's something like 76 drug and rehabilitation treatment and prevention programs just at the federal level. And addiction rates are rising. So obviously something's not working there. We have three different agencies that do catfish inspections, three different agencies that have to inspect the same damn catfish, paying three different salaries to look at that same catfish to say it's safe for consumption. It's insanity.
If it wasn't so perverse, it would be funny, right?
Absolutely. But yeah. What concerns me more is the blurring of lines between the government and corporate America. That's what's really starting to frighten me, because we're seeing that corporate America and the government are merging into one almost. That's what it appears to be. And we look at these corporations, they become weaponized politically. There's no doubt about it. What happened to corporate America that it changed so much? I mean, obviously it used to be about the bottom line, profits, shareholders. If we're going to get involved in a community, it's about rebuilding a community center. And instead of getting into all the social issues, the political issues. But when they got the bailouts in 2009, that's where you could really trace it back to. When the government got involved in playing and manipulating the economy, these corporations became much more politically weaponized.
Yeah, and they kind of learned to play the game really, really well. That's what I mean by the whole system has to change. I mean, take run a list of all the agencies that and all the Congress, the people in Congress that Google contributes to. Just see what that list looks like. People won't believe it. That's just an example. You know, the whole lobbying game, and what is it, like 8 of the 10 wealthiest counties in the country or around Washington, D.C.?
Of course.
It's not, just the Congress, but it's all the lobbying primarily that goes on. So, yeah, it's the, it has to change. We've got to get the money out of it. But you know what? I don't know. Again, I go back. I don't know that we do until we can go back to this kind of concept of federalism. We got a little win from the Supreme Court recently. It's a start.
Correct.
To start. Now, can that be applied up and down the line as far as our federal bureaucracy? I hope so. Maybe it's the beginning. You know, maybe it just gets bad enough where people go, it's not working anymore. It's kind of a scary thought because you never know what the reaction of that is, right?
Absolutely. But you're so right. It's got to start with the return to our founding principles, the concept of federalism, limited government, and understanding that the people that staff governments are flawed, therefore government itself is going to be flawed. Jeff, I really appreciate you coming to take the time on to speak to the audience. We're going to have links up to the book at the PAS Report website, PASReport.com.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it.
It's great. And people can find me at humanevents.com. And thanks for having me on your show. All the best.
I enjoyed that conversation, and I appreciate Jeff taking the time out to speak with the PAS Report audience. I have all the links up to Jeff's work on the PAS Report website, PASReport.com, including his book, American Restoration, How to Unshackle the Great Middle Class. Just go to the show notes. As always, please share this episode with others, and if you find the content informative, please take 30 seconds to leave a 5-star rating, write a review on Apple Podcasts. As for Wednesday's episode, I'm working on a great episode. Make sure you tune in. Until then, I want to thank you for joining me.
Thank you for listening to the PAS Report Weekly Roundup Podcast.
Have a good one.
Bye. Be sure to rate, share, and subscribe to the podcast so you'll never miss an episode. Also, visit PASReport.com and follow us on Twitter at PAS Report.